One. Hey everybody, this is Andrew with the We Are Rising podcast. I'm joined by my co-host all the way from down south, J. Christian Gary Focus Fights. New Focus Fights.
Hey
New and
y'all,
improved Focus
how's it
Fights.
going? Hey y'all, how's it going? I'm just happy to be here, and I'm pretty sure this guy is also happy to be here as well, in case you haven't noticed about him. Well, let's go ahead and give a quick intro. 6'6", 301 pounds from Los Angeles, California. He will be on the Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 9 card next weekend, live on Fight TV Plus. This man, of course, is Eric. Well, actually, this man, of course, is Josh Barnett's training partner on the regular. This is Eric Hammer. How are you, sir?
Good, fellas. How you guys doing?
Doing great
We're
here.
doing all
Doing
right.
good. It's so funny because I think the last time we talked was your debut in Bloodsport, and I think that was your return to pro wrestling. And some of you know, it's great to have you back since then because you know you've had your matches in Bloodsport. And
Yeah.
what does it feel, how does it feel like to be, you know, yeah, that was your first match in a long time. Now you're kind of like a Bloodsport regular, undefeated. How does it feel to the kind of yeah, that, make that, I would say, a solid return to pro wrestling.
It's fun. I enjoy it. I say it keeps me young. As I get older, I'm looking for new challenges and things to do. You know, one of the issues as you do get older, it's staying relevant and staying fit, and you know, you got a family and everything else, and keep that edge. So when I get back in there, I love it, man. It's like the prep, and then you walk out, your blood's boiling, and man, I enjoy every aspect of competition. So, you know, from the first one to the last one, it's just an amazing feeling. So it's gonna be back.
And we got a little cameo from little
Yeah.
Eric Hammer.
So hello, my friend.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
So compare your first match to the most recent match. I think I was it Bloodsport 8 or 7? I forgot.
You know, I actually don't even remember quite honestly. Another thing about getting old is that the memory starts to go and things just kind of start to blend together. But you know, I was supposed to be on the first one and I had an injury, and then I can't remember which one I joined in on, but you know, all of my matches I've enjoyed thoroughly. The opponents have all been tough ones. I look forward to another phenomenal match with Tankman coming up. So you know, wrestling from going from Japan to US soil, it's a big change. You know, I don't I'm assuming most people out there that follow pro wrestling know the difference as far as the crowd and the energy and stuff. So, you know, when you go out for a blood sport crowd and it's like wham, it hits you know, and then you go out to a Japanese style match, and it's like an orchestra in there, you know, it's very delicate and it's completely opposite. So I've been in both arenas and I really enjoy both for different reasons. So it's great.
And so, well, I'm curious to know, did you get any offers after your first match to do like other promotions? Because again, for those that don't know, you've only wrestled for Bloodsport since you returned. But I'm just curious, did you get any other offers and you just turned them down?
Not anything serious. Josh and I were talking after my first one, and you know, talk possibly discussing doing more. And you know, just where things are at for me at the time. I just couldn't afford to travel around like a lot of the pro wrestlers are able to do. You know, and so I had to pass on some of the stuff. I really had to pass on the idea of doing other promotions. And frankly, I really like what Bloodsport's about. And unless there's another organization that can match what they're doing, I don't know if I would necessarily take it. I might listen to it and hear the spiel, but I'm not sure I would jump on it.
So, come to think of it, would that also mean that, considering the fact that Josh Barnett does work with Gunryu Jima in Japan, would that also mean that Gunryu Jima is out the question?
No say, my friend.
Fair enough, fair enough. I also, the pro wrestling also world has changed since we first talked. Now we got AEW, Pro Wrestling Noah is on the up and up in Japan as well. And I'm what where do you think that has pro wrestling? Because I know when we first talked, I think you had a very negative impression of where pro wrestling was at that point. It was very, very like circus-like and not. It seemed to have you seem to think it lost its sporting element to it. Do you think that it? Do you think it's improved since then? Do you think it's been the same? Do you think it's got even worse?
I think what I called it back then was aerial acrobatics. And I didn't want to be part of that scene, you know. That to me, that whole world is very stunt oriented. And you know, what you just said is, you know, in context of athleticism, I don't think there's a lot of pro wrestlers out there that actually know how to wrestle. And to me, that's a problem. That's an issue, you know. There's a couple in the WWE that I know of. I really don't watch a whole lot of WWE stuff, but like guys like Bobby Lashley and Shayna Baszler and even Ronda Rousey, you know, they all know how to legitimately wrestle and or partake in a legitimate combat environment. So what I like about Bloodsport is there is no ropes, there are no turnbuckles. You know, it's wrestling. Like you have to know how to wrestle. So my logic in my mind is, how in the hell can you call yourself a pro wrestler if you don't even know how to fucking pro wrestle? And it does irritate me a little bit. But you know, that's just my take on it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that disagree, and that's okay, but I don't give a shit.
Good point. Good point, Eric. But come to think of it, that begs me to ask the question. When it comes down to a certain big promotion in the Northeastern United States using non-professional wrestlers to basically take bumps and obviously get future contracts, and of course, I'm talking about the name, image, and likeness deal that they're using with ex-college stars. How does that make you feel, considering the fact that some of these guys are in there just to say, hey, I did it?
You mean like you're talking about collegiate wrestlers going in and doing pro wrestling?
Well, not just collegiate wrestlers, but also, college football players, volleyball players, basketball players, stuff like that.
You mean like other athletes and coming to the pro wrestling world? They don't know how to wrestle. So I really stand by my line. Like if you don't know how to shoot a double, or even, yeah, I don't say it has to be a good double because there's a lot of wrestlers out there that are amateur that are just shitty wrestlers. But at least they understand the grind of, I mean, listen, I don't know if you guys have ever wrestled like amateurly in college or high school or grade school. Okay. So there's nothing that I can tell you to describe how it feels to be in that kind of setting where you're on a mat by yourself with another man trying to beat the piss out of each other under a set rules, and you can't hear anything. All you can hear is your opponent breathing, your dog ass tired, and you got to keep grinding this thing out. There's a certain mentality that comes with that sport. And I can't, I like to me, you're trying to imitate that feeling in a pro wrestling setting for fans, and you've never done the work. So it's an insult to a lot of it's an insult in my opinion to a lot of wrestlers, the guys that have gone out and done the thing. So yeah, if you're a basketball player, you know, and you go and do the pro wrestling gimmick and you go over because you're a character, then I don't really care about that. You know what I'm saying? If you go over because I'm watching you and you know how to move in and out and you know how to, you know, legitimately wrestle, I have a lot of respect for that. You know, even if you're not high up on the list of fan favorites, I still respect you. you know? That makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, I totally get it. I totally get it. I can say the worst thing though. I've never done. I didn't do wrestling, but I do jujitsu. I do grappling tournaments. The worst thing is when the person's on you and their sweat is dripping on your face. That is the worst. That is worse than just their breath and getting tired. There's nothing worse than somebody else's sweat just pulverizing, just like
Right in the
drowning you.
eye.
Yes, right in the eye or right in the mouth as it's happened.
I prefer the mouth over the eye because the eye just stings, you know.
Oh, no, not the mouth, because, well, here's the thing. I can forgive the eye, but the mouth, because I can't breathe. Because as you can see with this hair, I use that to my advantage.
Did I answer your
Let
question though? I don't know if I answered your question there.
Oh, I think it does. Well, Chris, did Ant what do you that's you
Oh
asked a
yeah,
question.
of course. You definitely answered my question, Eric.
I
Thank
just,
you.
yeah, I just, I the keep the sport pure. I really think more people should learn how to at least make an attempt. You know, there's guys that I really respect that don't know how to pro wrestle, and they go, "Oh shit, I don't know how to pro wrestle," and they go back and learn. Like there's guys that have come down and trained with Josh and I that have never stepped foot on a amateur wrestling mat, but they realize that it's important to the job, and they go in and they learn it. And that I'm like, oh man, now that's awesome. I have a lot of respect for that because they're doing something they're very uncomfortable with.
Actually, you know, the funny thing is, speaking of your Bloodsport match, Calvin Tankman, he's one of those people who I definitely know has trained or cross-trained. I don't know specifically which martial arts, but I definitely have. I know, Chris, you talked to him. I forgot which match it was a few years ago that he had, but I think he
I
mentioned he
think it
had.
was prior to the COVID year back in 2020. It was prior to him wrestling in Indianapolis for Bloodsport.
I th
Okay.
then he met yeah, he mentioned that he had done some cross training, I think, right?
I thought he actually wrestled in high school for a little bit. I don't
That's
know if.
what I think I'm thinking, yeah, that was it. I think that was what it was. But oh yeah, so yeah, let's talk about Calvin Tankman. Are you familiar with him as an opponent? Have you seen the way he wrestles? I mean, just what do you think about him as well? I mean, he's a huge, I don't know,
Yeah,
is he bigger than you? And I know you're a big guy.
he's a big dude. I don't know how we stand up eye to eye as far as height, but yeah, he's a big fella and he's strong as hell. I've seen him wrestle, you know, a few times live, and you know, for bigger guys, a lot of times they look slow. That dude's not slow. When he wants to get motor in, bro, he's got an engine on him, but it just depends on, you know, if he wants to do it. So yeah, to my understanding, I know he's done some amateur wrestling, and you know, for me, I'm extremely fast for a guy my size. If you look at the last match I had against Tito, Bad Dude Tito, I got taken down, I think, one or two times, but I was a little arrogant with how my speed was going to play out. He caught me, yeah, I just got caught. I don't plan on that happening though with Calvin because I know that, you know, Tito's a strong dude. He's a fast guy, but I feel that I'm 10 times faster and more athletic than Calvin. So, and I don't have a problem with
Just for the record, Calvin Tankman, who is from Indianapolis, Indiana, is 6 foot 2, 355 pounds. I mean,
that.
obviously, yeah, I know he a big boy, but when it comes down to the fact that you haven't wrestled since October of 2021, I mean, do you think that that's going to play into a bit of, I wouldn't even say ring rust, but competition rust?
You know, I think cardiovascular wise, it'll probably affect my lungs. And the only reason why I'd say is because I'm going to be so hyped up. I don't know how much energy I'm going to burn just waiting for my name to be called as I come down because I love that rush, you know, that buildup. It's why I sit there, you know, I walk out just about 30 seconds later because I have to sit there and just kind of bring it down a second, you know. And then when I walk out, wham, it hits again. That's the only thing I could see affecting me is, you know, he's been competing, he's been, you know, in and out of the ring. As far as athleticism and everything else, no, I'm a fucking phenomenal athlete, man. And I still train athletically. You know, I'm not out doing the heavy bench press and the heavy squats and the heavy deadlift. I train like a proper athlete. So I know my footwork. I know how I feel. And I'm not worried about any kind of layoff, honestly.
And so what would you, what is how, when you go against you really, the guys who you fought in Bloodsport are like mostly like the big guys. When you train, how do you train against somebody who, or prepare for somebody who's as huge as like a Calvin Tankman? Is cardio more important? Is it more about trying to like get, I don't know, get any more stronger than you already are in preparation? Or more limber, like what is the preparation for somebody like like that size?
Well, for you mean competing against someone that size?
Like what's the like what's what is the main th thing that you prepare for somebody like of his size?
Right. When I assess a guy like Tankman, I want to go in with a better gas tank than him. 'Cause he may be a touch stronger because of his size or because of his mass. But I know it's not gonna be so far, out of the park. I'm not, 100 pounds where he's gonna be throwing me around. So I want to make sure that my conditioning is up to speed. So, with my training, it's a lot of, on the mat, get up, get down, chain wrestling, higher intensity. So when I'm training for something like this, I'll set the timer for 30 seconds and it's a hard effort. And then it's a 30 seconds of hand fighting, then 30 seconds hard. So I'm constantly, in that kind of heavy pressure, heavy taxing on the lungs, and then trying to recover while working for that 30 seconds. So I interval, my training. And when I wrestled what's his name in Indianapolis, big fella, what the hell is his name? Man, he hit me so hard.
Call Jax.
Yeah, bro, he hit me so hard in the beginning. He actually knocked me out. And the only reason I woke up is because when I hit my face on the, if you go back and watch that match, if you find it, he hit me and I hit my head on the mat, and that's when I woke up. And I wrestled that entire match without even knowing what I was doing. I don't remember it. When I leave the ring, I go the wrong way, and I actually got lost in the back. A couple of the fans had to take me around to get me to the backstage because I had no clue where I was. It was pretty crazy. But that guy, he was so strong and quick because he wrestled at Oregon, and I had this mindset of condition, condition, condition. I just wasn't expecting him to be that fast and have that much power. But man, he caught me good.
I think also the other thing that makes Tankman a unique opponent. I mean, like you said, Kyle Jack, trained at was it Oregon State? That's where Chael Sonnen and a bunch of other people. That's where
Nah,
the
Andrew, I think Eric said that Carl Jack trained at the University of Oregon.
oh, University of Oregon. Excuse me. Okay.
It could have been one. I don't know. I know he wrestled in Oregon. I don't know if it was the Beavers or the Ducks, but I know he's a legitimate, at that time, I think Pac-10, college wrestler. Plus his dad's a legitimate wrestler also.
And you also fought Bad Dude Tito, you fought JR Kratos. I think the thing about Tankman is that out of probably all those opponents, he probably has even though he has the amateur wrestling from high school or whenever, the fact that he hasn't really done that much cross training can make him a little, can also that could bring a big bit of unpredictability as well, I think, because you
Yeah,
don't know what he has in his arsenal.
I've stood by what kind of the same context and what you're referring to. It's like I'd rather fight a pro than an amateur because when a pro throws a punch, I generally know where it's coming from. When you fight an amateur, like in the street, bro, they're throwing punches diagonally upwards and all sorts of just crazy angles. You don't know what the hell's going on. So, I'd much rather fight a pro or someone that's, been in the wrestling world because I know they're going to collar tie and do certain things. But yeah, you're right. you know, he may come with some crazy shit I've never seen before, you know, or not in a long time, because most of the guys I've been working with are legitimate wrestlers. So, you know, at least I wouldn't say he's not a legitimate wrestler. I'm talking about legitimate for a longer period, you know, high level guys. You know, I got guys in the room that are college wrestlers and like guys like Josh Barnett, that kind of stuff, you know. So
it's how your strategy for this match. What do you think? I won't ask you what your exact strategy is, but do you see this fight going the way of a TKO or a submission in your favor? How do you see this going?
I'm a big fan of collecting arms. You know, I'm double wrist locking everyone, and I want to keep it that way. I want to take that guy's arm off. I'm a huge fan of hunting for that. That's a big one for me. So, you know, I like the submission game. I like rolling for ankles and knees. It's harder to do, you know, with people that don't have, you know, shoes on. You know, not everyone wears shoes, but, you know, I really enjoy rolling for submissions. It's harder to knock these bigger dudes out, you know. I'd love to knock them out, but I think the reality of the situation is going to be a submission in some sort. But, you know, who knows? I may catch him.
The question is, you know, like, a guy that big, so I don't know. Can you even choke a guy who's that big? I can't even tell if he has a neck. A neck that can be choked.
You know, it's hard, especially when you got bigger forearms, to get that underneath the neck. You got to get really, really creative with that, you know, and it's really easy for him to hide the neck. But I guess it depends on the choke. You know, sometimes it works against them. If, you know, you're looking at a triangle action there, it's a little bit harder. There's less room for them. But, you know, the rear naked for me is a little bit harder because my forearm's a little bit bigger. And, you know, choking Josh out is tough. One, he's just a wily vet. But, you know, getting my big arm in between his neck and collarbone area, chin and collarbone, it's a little tough at times.
He also got a powerful power bomb. He's done it many times in his matches, so that I would be afraid. I wouldn't even think about a triangle around him because that is just asking for some rampage, Babalu.
Yeah, right.
Something Man, happened.
I used to train with Babalu, and that guy, there's no one I've ever met that can knee harder than Babalu. He would take me up off the ground. It was amazing how hard he could knee.
Actually, speaking of training, for those that don't know, you originally wrestled for IGF, Inoki Genome Federation. Yeah. I know that I think you told us that you had some interactions with Antonio Inoki. Unfortunately, this year he passed away. I'm curious to know, do you have any memories, particular things that stand out from Inoki?
You know,
it's probably a lot, but like whatever most memorable ones.
I think one of the coolest ones, and if I'm repeating myself, I've told this story a few times, especially around his passing. You know, I don't know. I've been very fortunate in this life to end up where I've ended up in the right time, the right place with the right people. And I got off the plane one time and my buddy Simon picked me up and he's like, "Hey, Mr. Inoki wants to see you." I'm like, "Oh shit." You know, I'm exhausted, but Inoki asked for you, like, you're going, right? So I'm off the plane. I drive over to this this bar, and Inoki's sitting there in a suit. He's got two or three, you know, people with him, and he's smoking a cigar. And I sit down, and you know, we start talking. And I'm looking around. And I'm like, I am the only wrestler here, and he and I are just kicking back. I order a whiskey. He gives me another cigar. And we started talking everything about politics to life, to philosophy, to wrestling. Not so much. We didn't really spend too much time on wrestling because I really wanted to see. I wanted to get into his mind in something different than what everyone's going to ask him about, you know. And it was really interesting. And then, you know, six or seven whiskeys later, it turned into, hey, so when you're face cranking somebody, and then it turned into, well, let me show you. And he was absolutely ruthless. We're on this bar floor. He's in a suit and he is just cranking on me. And it's like that heavy, deep Japanese laugh where the harder I'm tapping and like tell him to stop, the harder he goes, man. And I just like, okay, I'm not gonna stop telling him to stop, because then it's just getting harder and harder and harder. But man, I left with a black eye. And that was just from sitting in the bar with him, and he was showing me face cranks and all sorts of crazy shit. So, you know, I've had, that was probably one of my favorite times with Mr. Noki, just because it was he and I. But you know, there's the time we had in Korea, North Korea, you know, getting to hang out and talk to him, and just when you're around a legend like that, you just want to absorb as much as you possibly can, because you don't really. Maybe a lot of people don't realize what they're actually doing at that moment. When you look back, you're grateful for what's been presented to you, you know?
Okay. So you say Noki and North Korea, is there anything more that you could say? Because whenever I hear those two words, you get those two, that there's gotta be some interesting stuff behind it, if there's anything that you can tell.
Well, I mean, yeah, Noki brought us to North Korea, and we did two shows in North Korea. And Bob Sapp, John Anderson, and myself were the only Americans. And I mean, it was very interesting, you know. That was right around the time when that movie came out, when they were making fun of the North Korean leader. I can't remember the movie, but they did called?
Oh no! You're thinking of a different one, Chris. The interview, the one that got like banned, or that they couldn't release.
Was it Seth Rogen or someone?
Yes, that did the interview.
The parody that came out around that time, or was about to. And I remember calling my buddy. I'm like, hey, my liaison. I'm like, Simon, look, bro, I don't know if this is a good idea. Like 2 weeks before we were supposed to go out there, like this thing started advertising. I don't know if this is a good idea, bro. And he goes, man, you'll be fine. I'm like, all right. And, you know, we did the deal and went out there, and it was interesting. Like I said, I don't know how I've ended up in these, you know, in the places I've been with the people I've been with, but that's something I'll never forget, obviously, for numerous reasons. But, you know, talking to the people out there, it was great. Yeah, I don't know. I can't really describe it too much. Maybe offline I'll tell you some stories, but
I mean, maybe you can tell it more so to Andrew more than you can to me, but still though, I mean, when it came down to that particular movie that starred Seth Rogen and Randall Park from Fresh Off the Boat, I mean, when it came down to that movie, aren't you kind of glad that it didn't turn out into something as dangerous as it would have been?
Oh, hell yeah, man, because you know, when I remember calling my wife, and I told before I leave, I'm going to call you when I get there, but don't ask me how things are, because these phones are tapped 100%. Mm-hmm. And sure as shit, hey, how is everyone? I'm like, yep, everyone's great. This place is amazing. You know, it's like, I'm not going to say anything, you know, that's going to incriminate myself. But, you know, for the most part, everyone was really nice. You know, we had a liaison government worker that shadowed us, kind of like Rocky IV, you know, everywhere we went. And, you know,
come to think of it, Eric, I probably picture it. I mean, I don't know if you watched The Simpsons, but I would kind of picture it as Mr. Burns putting a gun into somebody's back while they're trying to basically give the fourth wave and say, "That's it, smile for the camera. Everybody's enjoying this."
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is we were talking, me and my liaison, the last night we were there before we were leaving, he and I got wasted together. Trash, and everyone else had gone to bed. I'm like, I'm staying up with this dude, and I'm gonna pick his brain about whatever thing I can pick his brain about, right? Bro, we talked till I think 3 a.m. because he couldn't leave till I wanted to go back, right? And I'll tell you some stories offline, but it was really interesting, because whether it was the alcohol or the time we had spent together there for that 4 or 5 days, it was just two humans, and it wasn't North Korea and US. It was just two guys in a bar talking about family and kids. And it was very human, you know, because you go there with this expectation of what it's going to be like. And I still don't know what it's like completely because I didn't get to see everything that would tell the complete story. But for that small window of time, because of Inoki, I got to experience something that I don't think even our president will get to experience. And that's sitting down in a bar talking to a North Korean in North Korea having a whiskey. You know?
Oh, I mean, no, that depends on which one you were talking about at the time.
Obama, that's rare. That's one of those things you can always like. You could tell your kids' kids, or you know, like if you know if you happen to be single, which I know you're not single, but if you were single, that's like one of those like, oh, you know, ask an interesting fact about me. And that's like one of the things you can just like.
Yeah,
I've been to North Korea, and like, there's nothing. That is an experience that legitimately cannot be, I don't know, maybe going to Antarctica is the only other one I can think of, maybe.
I mean, yeah, if you think about it, like 99% of Americans will never make it over there, you know?
I don't even know if 99% of Americans want to go to North Korea or even would even know how to get to North Korea. And meanwhile, you got Antonio Inoki, you know, basically giving you a golden ticket and that's the thing is I don't even know what I mean. I know he was an ambassador in North Korea. I know he did stuff in hostages in Iraq as well. So I know he had all these connections, but it's still like one of those things where it's just like how is this one man doing, you know, pro wrestling, MMA, mixed combat, ambassador stuff and he's doing all this stuff. It's just like it's very like we interviewed the guy who wrote Ali versus Inoki, and one of the things that was a common theme was just that there's just like nobody, there will be nobody else that can even come to his level. The one name that we came up with was The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, in terms of just like that celebrity notoriety. But even The Rock couldn't get into North Korea easily.
And you know, you got to think that Inoki did all this before social media, before the internet, before, you know, these huge waves of data being sent back and forth. You know, he made this celebrity status without any of that. And, you know, like to summarize, like Inoki was so respected over there, I had an easier time getting into North Korea than I did Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. When I went to Canada, they pulled me in secondary and I was there for 2 hours. When I went to North Korea, they looked at my passport and said, welcome.
I can't believe that. I figured that, I don't know if the Inoki helped, you know, but I just would figure like, listen, you're going to a room, if you're not from China or from one of the countries that are friends with North Korea, they are bringing you to another room for some private questioning.
I'm like, man, maybe they're going to take my phone. I didn't know. Nothing. They let us take pictures. I got a ton of photos, man. I got photos with kids, you know. Some people were really, really nervous to be around me. Or other Americans, you know. So, you know, the Inoki gimmick with the scarf and stuff. Well, they gave us towels to hand out to the crowds, you know, because they were going to be going to the show. And we had this huge, huge, you know, kind of pre-show thing. And I'll never forget this. I went to go hand it around this. She was probably 16, 17 years old, this young girl. And you would have thought I was passing her COVID. She ran away from that thing so fast, and I just get the sense that, you know, she was just scared of the American, you know, for some reason. But like literally, you would have thought I was chasing her with some disease. It was that bad.
I mean, come to think of it, it was probably the same way with a lot of folks in that particular part of the world. Still is.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We could talk forever about North Korea because I'm just so fascinated. You just brought this up, but you can tell us some stories offline. But going back to your match with Calvin Tankman, something that I just thought of is that he's also going to be wrestling a whole bunch of other times that whole WrestleMania week. And I don't know, maybe even doing a show right after your match. I don't even know, but he's definitely going to be wrestling more than once. So you might be the first person he's wrestling on that day. So you're getting a fresh Calvin Tankman. Is do you Do you think that I mean, what I mean here, you know how like sometimes, you know, in these tournaments, you've done these tournaments where like, you know, sometimes the first match they don't do, you don't do so well because you don't have the rhythm, but in the second match and third match you kill it. You ever has that ever happened to you?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know if he'll be able to do his second and third match, honestly.
Okay, good point. Okay. Presuming
So,
that he's able to do a second and third, but that's the thing. Sorry, go
I
ahead.
can't even assume that. I think I've never met anybody that I've ever competed against that have said, "Oh yeah, I'm ready to go do something else other than just go home and go to fucking sleep." You know? I mean, that kid that I lost to what's his name? I did a catch tournament over there in New Jersey against
You're
this.
referring to Carl Jacks again, right?
No. I did a match against a kid who's a real pain in my ass. He used to disrespect Josh all the time. You know what I'm talking about? He
My
actually.
God, was it Hideki Suzuki?
No. It wasn't for Bloodsport. It was another organization. It was Jake Shannon put it on. I can't
I
remember this
mean,
kid's name.
Andrew, you probably might know more about this than either one of us do.
I'll have to do research this after because I'm trying to. I know Jake Shannon, and I know he's part of the Catch Wrestling Facebook group.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. He and I did this match. I wrestled Pat Stanos, I think the first match, and I had to wrestle this loudmouth fucking kid. But when you look at, you know, after that match, this was a wrestling match. This kid was so fucked up. He sent me a message later, and he's like, "Bro, I've never been beat up like that before." And he wrestled at Michigan. What the hell is this kid's name? I can't stand him. He's just
Oh my God.
disrespectful little arrogant motherfucker. I can't remember his name.
Now see, now
That's
see,
how
you got us all trying to do research
that's
now.
how relevant he is. But
So
all I
yeah,
know
so
is
yeah. So you're saying connected with Calvin Tankman, you
I
know,
don't think
what
Tateman's going
the
to be able to do his other matches, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
I don't think
gotcha.
he's going to be able to do them because I'm a grinder, man. Like, you know. You take me down once, like look at Tito. Tito took me down two or three times, and I just get right back up. You cannot stop me, bro. You can't.
Okay, now I am looking at this particular list. Does any one of them seem familiar to you?
Oh, can't see the
Mackie?
list. Can't see the
Yeah.
list, Chris.
You
God.
go on YouTube and Google
Okay.
Eric Hammer. It probably comes up.
Okay. Kenny Lester, Nick Caglia, Brandon Ruiz, John Zhang,
That's
Curran Jacobs.
Curran Jacobs. That's the guy right there. Curran Jacobs. So this guy's been calling Josh out for years, right? And Josh is like, I'm not gonna give this guy a fucking name because he's a nobody, right? So Josh and I are training. I go to Mexico with my wife for a few days. He calls me up. I'm fucking hammered on a boat. He goes, look, bro, I legitimately fucked up my ankle or my rib. Something happened to him. I got injured. I need you to do this match. You're going to enter this tournament. I said, fine. I'm like, just so you know, though, Josh, I literally had one fucking leg hanging over the boat with a Pacifico in my left hand and my phone in my right. And this was 2 weeks away. I'm like, all right, just so you know, I'm pretty fucking trash for this, man. He goes, no big deal. So I get in there, I do it. I go out against, I want to say Stanos, great guy. And then I wrestle Kern. And the rules originally were in the back, we're going to go 3 rounds. And whoever doesn't win, or if there's no winner, then it's takedowns, we'll decide the decision. I said, perfect, great. He's a college wrestler. I'm a college wrestler. Fine. So I want to say I think I got two or three takedowns. I got all the takedowns, actually. He didn't take me down once, if I remember correctly. And I go back to the corner in the third round. And they come out and go, hey, we're going to change the rules. We're just going to let you guys keep going. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit, but whatever, dude. And I go out there and I end up just kind of beating this kid up. And he ends up submitting me. I want to say rear naked choke is what he ended up getting on me. After that, we kind of squash things. And then he starts running his mouth again, probably about 6 months later. And I'm like, and he and I are going back and forth now online over this. And I got a call from Jake. I'm like, hey, would you do another match against Kern? I'm like, I'll do it for free. Set it up right now. This time I want to train for it. Never happened. Never materialized. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the, but that would, I might beat that the fuck out of him.
But still, though, that would probably deny me and ask him, would you face him off in Bloodsport rules?
Yeah. But like I told you, so he came to town. He came to actually to town to train with Josh. And I said, Josh, just so you know, and I told him the same thing, Kern. I said, Kern, I said, if I see you on the street, in a restaurant, in a park, on a train, on a plane, anywhere, like it's going to happen no matter what, just so you know. And I told Josh the same thing. So he came to train with Josh. Josh didn't call me for 2 weeks while he was out here. And that's how serious I am about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can only take so much disrespect before I reach my point. And if he wanted to do a blood sport, fucking A, dude. I will. If they said, hey, Tankman's out, Kern's in, I'm like, fine. Perfect. Let's do it now. Like, right now.
So actually,
basically, it would be like facing off against one Midwestern hoss because, of course, Tankman's from Indiana, and then facing off against another one, of which Curran's a former Michigan State wrestler.
Yeah, well, I don't give a shit where he's from. I just can't stand him.
So would you say that this match, you know, since this match with Curran's over, are you going in there? Maybe, I guess. Pretending that Tankman is Curran and kind of like just getting all that, I guess, Curran energy, bringing it into this match and then using that against Tankman, so to speak?
No, I mean, so when I'm competing, I carry the same level of hostility for every opponent that I have. It doesn't matter if it's, but they're faceless. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't, you know, there's a bit of savagery to what I do. In my mindset, and to get like to truly get to that state where if you watch the match going back to Kern, like I wouldn't shake his hand. I'm not there to be your friend for that 7 minutes, 5, 10, whatever it is. Like, we are not fucking friends. I'm not having beers with you. I'm not here to say hello and ask how your kids are doing. I don't care. So when I compete against individuals, they're faceless, because at some point, you know, I am still a human. So when I'm competing against someone, I don't see any face. It's just this object in front of me that I need to go down and destroy. So I don't see Kern when I'm racing, wrestling Tankman. I don't see Tankman when I'm wrestling, you know, someone else. It's just this entity in front of me that I've been told I need to go destroy. And there we are.
What about after all it's been settled, you win or you lose, draw, whatever. Does that
generally change? It does. And even with Kern, it did. We were in the back, shook hands and say, hey, man, he came over to the locker room and he goes, look, I know how I've been. It was really honorable. It was very honorable. And for a minute we were solid. And then all of a sudden he started resurfacing again and his antics came up. So, you know, if Tankman is honorable, win or lose, then so will I'll be the same. But during that period, while we're in the mat or on the mat, we're not friends. We're not. I'm not a big fan of being friends with people before the match either. You know, to me, I don't do that. I know a lot of fighters do. They joke around and pal around. I can't. Not, I don't want to. I'm not there. That doesn't interest me. You know, if you want to come over and shoot the shit afterwards, I'm cool with that, but not daring. Nah.
Or before. I know that a lot of times, you know, when fighters, MMA wrestlers, whoever, you know, sometimes it's just bound to happen that they just run into each other at the hotel or, you know, the same, you know, because it's the same area, you know, especially it just happens. Has that ever happened to you? Where you came, when you encounter your opponents and you just, you know, I don't know, they try to shake your hand and you just said, "Not now, buddy," or, you know, something like
Well,
that. Like, has that ever happened to you?
no, I mean, I there, no, I'm as long as there's, if long, as long as things are up on the up and up, there's never really been an opponent that I didn't, except for one, and we already know who that is. I already named him, which I probably shouldn't have, because now it's, anyways. Yeah, there's only been one, and that was him for the most part. I've respected everyone I've wrestled against or competed against, you know, and you know, there's the only confrontation I've had is against Kern, post match, and there was one other guy that hit on my wife after a match one time, and I got him in the lobby, but I'm not going to mention that name because that didn't go over too well, so.
Understood. Leave them anonymous so that you can beat them up privately.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I saw him and I'm like, bro, we're not fucking friends, man. Like, don't come up and try and shake my hand, you know? And see, the thing is, I don't forget what happened is we both had a match in Japan, and this happened at the end of the night when we were drinking, and everyone kind of went their separate ways. My wife's like, hey, don't make a big deal out of this. I said, fine. Because I have two felonies and seven misdemeanors off an incident very similar to this one, that happened in 2001, where a group of guys grabbed my wife, my girlfriend at the time, but she's my wife now, and I went to town on them, and so I tucked that away, and I didn't see this guy probably for like 6, 8 months later in the lobby, and he came up and shake my hand, and yeah. It just didn't go too well. So those are the only two times I really had an incident, you know, with Kern and this other dude. But other than that, man, I'm just an asshole in the ring.
I, you know, that's something. Yeah, that's you know, that's, you know, that is a great, like, you know how, you know, like, wrestlers have their sayings, you know, like, or, you know, like, beat me if you can't, beat me if you can't survive, I'll let you. Yours should be, I'm an asshole in the ring.
Yeah.
Because nope, that is such an open-ended one that could be like, so what does he mean by assholes? I mean, like, he's gonna beat the shit out of me, asshole. Is he just gonna, like, you know, like, rub his elbow into my face, asshole? What are we talking about? What type of asshole are we talking? So that I like that. I like that. That should be, you should put that on a t-shirt and sell it at Bloodsport 9. I'm an asshole,
Maybe
right?
I will. I got a guy that can make the shirt actually. I might do that actually. That's a good idea. Let's see how that runs. Maybe I'll try that.
Oh, you definitely should. Listen, you know, all your matches in Bloodsport have been, you know, ended in spectacular fashion. Listen, you'll definitely be having some fans wanting to buy. I'm pretty sure you've gotten have you gotten any, like, contact from, like pro wrestling fans who said, like, oh, listen, I never saw you, like, ever wrestle before. Like, you put on, like, my favorite match at Bloodsport or something like that.
Yeah, usually, you know, I'm unheard of for the most part. You know, I'm not on the radar of a lot of people, but I do get a lot of people come up to me after the match, and they're like, "Man, who are you? Where have you been? What's going on?" You know, and there the reception is pretty cool because you know, I don't do it for the fans. I just do it because I like to do it. But when you hear, you know, hey man, like, we don't know who you are, but we loved what you've done, you know, tonight, then that's cool. It's cool, you know.
Yeah. Would you say that's also another reason why you stand out? Because I think one of the problems of pro wrestling now, I think Chris might agree with this, is that we see too much of the same people over and over again, television or on the circuit, you know. Or like, you know, Calvin Tankman, you know, listen, big fan of his, but you know what? He'll be doing 15 shows. So, you know, if you go to all of them, you kind of, I don't know what, you may get him on a good day, you may get him on a bad day, you never know. But with you're just coming to the Bloodsport shows. Do you think that's missing in pro wrestling now, is just the special attraction, the guy or girl who you see one time that week or that month, and then you may, because at one point, pro wrestling, the stars never used to wrestle on TV
Right.
ever. They would always be on, you know,
House shows.
I actually hadn't thought of it like that, but that's a really good point, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that is, you know, I remember, you know, in the early 90s, you know, looking at the UFCs, and when they come out once a month, it was like, oh shit, like there's a UFC on. Now it's, oh man, there's another fight tonight. You know, and it's just like you've just gotten accustomed to it. So I think that's a good way to, that's actually, I never really thought about it that way, you know, and maybe that is kind of the thing that goes over with the fans is they don't see me a whole lot. And I know that there are people, you know, I do get messages once I get announced from people. It's like, oh man, I'm happy to see you back on, you know, the shows. And you know, I don't read the board, so I don't really know what's being said. I don't know if more people like me than not, but I know at least there's a handful of them out there besides my wife and my son that enjoy it. So I keep rolling. And honestly, if there wasn't whether I'm a fan favorite, like if I wasn't going over at some point, Josh wouldn't have me on this show. You know, at the end of the day, he's a businessman and he wants to do what's best for blood sport, not my feelings. He doesn't give a shit about those. We're friends anyway, so you know.
I don't know, I can't tell with these Bloodsport shorts, but have you ever heard like the fans like Chance, like Eric, or like because the Bloodsport atmosphere is different from other pro wrestling shows. There's really, it's just, I don't know how to explain, but like, have you ever heard like, I know you're focusing on your match, like what's going on there, but have you ever heard, you know, like just fans like try maybe start a Let's Go Eric, or you know, Eric Chan or something? Like hammer chant or something.
I don't think I've ever gotten a chant going. Definitely hear a pop a little bit, you know, when I come out and the first time people don't know that I'm tatted up, you know, on my back and stuff. You hear, oh, you know, holy shit. And yeah, I don't think I've gotten a chant yet, but yeah, not that I can remember. But
Because I
I
think
did
and.
the response to me afterwards, you know, especially in the beginning, like if I went, you know, some of the if fans saw me walking around the arena, they didn't really know who I was. And then after my match, you know, they come up and go, holy shit, bro, like we didn't know. We love your music, we love what you're about, you know. So I definitely win over quite a few post match, you know.
I think that's what's you're in a unique spot, because I think every time you do a Bloodsport, you're always gonna have new people coming up to you. I'm sure maybe it happens to the other wrestlers, but I can't believe it's happening as much to some of the other people that are on this show, like as probably as many as you do. Because I think probably it must be, yeah, since you've done Bloodsport, has it happened every show where new fans be like, listen, I have never seen you, and
Yeah.
like, yeah.
It's and that's cool, you know. And like I said, if I wasn't appealing, then they wouldn't have me come back. Like I said, they don't, at the end of the day, it's about who's putting ass in the seats. And you know, if there was nothing to see, then I what the fuck, why would I be up there?
One of the last questions I have for you, Eric, so about pro wrestling, you know, is somebody who's wrestled in Japan, who's also been in North Korea, who's wrestles regularly for Bloodsport, and you know, trying to drop for Ned, you've been and just you know all this history behind you. What in the end, what is the essence of pro wrestling, and what makes someone a pro wrestler in your eyes?
That's a
I know it's a very loaded question, but you know, I'm just hearing all the spirit from you. I'm just, I
like a
want, I gotta pick your brain about this.
philosophical fucking, oh man. Ask me that again. I want to hear it one more time.
What makes someone a pro wrestler in your eyes? Because I'm sure if we ask 1,000 people this, some will say, oh, the minute you get into a ring, or the minute you start the day you start training. Some will say, you know, it's your first match. Some will say, oh, if you're an amateur, you know, if you've done amateur wrestling, that makes you a pro wrestler. There's probably 1,000 answers. So I'm guessing you must have something,
I've
especially
never
with all your
thought about
experience.
that. And that's a really tough question. You know, I don't think it could be the day you start, you know, training. I don't think it could even be your first match. I think, and I don't know if it's even for the person that's doing the thing, to make that call. Like, I can't tell you what made me a pro wrestler. I think that would have to come from like Josh. You see what I'm saying? Because I could have gone out there three times, done three matches, and not understood, you know, not really understood what's happening, you know. And you have guys like, you know, Stan Hansen's and these older dudes that can sit back and watch a wrestler and go, okay, he gets it. He knows what's going on, you know. And I think it was my second, third match. Stan Hansen walks up to me and goes, bro, I think it was my second match. He goes, is it your second match? I said, yeah. And he goes, man, you're doing things in your second match that I haven't done in years of pro wrestling. I was like, holy shit. Like, I came, you know what I'm saying? Like, damn. So I don't know if there's a time limit. You know, I don't know if there's a shelf life on when you actually become that, you know, what you're asking. I think that has to be thrown on the individual by the people that trained him, you mm-hmm. know, or her, or, you know, the people that are in your corner and say, yeah, you know what? You're now a pro wrestler. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. people can fake shit long, you know, as long as they want. And this would be anything. Like, you can go to, a high school wrestling practice and survive it. Doesn't make you a wrestler. You know what I'm saying? When your coach sits back and goes, okay, look, man, you know, you understand what this is about. Whether you're winning or losing, you understand what's happening, the grind it takes. You're here. You're not just showing up, but you're actually doing the thing. You are a wrestler. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have a kid that I trained strength and conditioning most part. I did some wrestling with him, but not the best athlete. But he walked on to a Division I university and wrestled and earned a scholarship. And nobody knows what he's actually done. And I'm so proud of that kid, because to do what he's doing is insanity to me. And when I look at that, I'm like, okay, he wasn't the best in high school. You know, he wasn't treated very well when he got into college, but it didn't stop him. He kept showing up and kept going. So he understands the thing. He understands the grind. To me, he's a wrestler. Whether he wins or loses, doesn't matter. He understands it. So long-winded, I don't know if I can put a call on that, man. Like what defines that, or how to even call that out. I think that has to come from like the elders, you know, the guys that were looking, you know, that are ahead, looking back going, okay, yeah. You know,
I think, Hiroshi Tanahashi, I don't know if you're familiar with him, New Japan pro wrestler. I think in his autobiography, he said, you become a pro wrestler when the audience, when you win, basically translate to like, when you win the audience's hearts. Or something like when you earn the audience respect, I think it would be translated as. And I know that, like, particularly in Japan, yeah, like that's what he said.
I could see that. That's, you know, kind of in the same context that I'm talking about. I didn't even think about the audience. Now, I think the audience in Japan, you know, you win them over. Yeah, I could see that being legitimate. Yep, that's mm-hmm. that's a wrestler.
But also, yeah. I think that was his goal. I think he always wanted to, you know, be the audience favorite or the fan favorite, you know. But again, like you said, you don't do it for the audience. So, mm-hmm. you know, that in that case, that goal wouldn't be your goal. So that, you know, that doesn't mean that. Well, yeah.
I don't think you have to win over the audience necessarily for them to deem you a pro wrestler, you know, or like that kind of like, if I understand the question, you know, that aha, I've arrived moment. You know, I think if correct me if I'm wrong, is that what you're asking me? Like, when does someone like as a pro wrestler get that? Fuck, I'm here. I've arrived.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, I don't think you have to win them over. necessarily for that to be dawned on you or placed on you. I think they can boo the hell out of you, you know, but they're still paying attention to you. They're still looking at you. They're still going, okay, look, man, there's something to this guy that I as a fan am exuding energy towards, whether it's positive or negative, he's still drawing me. So, yep. That dude, that as a whole, as a fan base, yeah, we may not like him, but yep, he's legitimate.
Now, considering the fact that Andrew has taken up most of the time talking about this, I can just go ahead and finish up and ask my two questions. First of all, when it comes down to your matchup against Calvin Tankman on March 31st at Bloodsport, obviously. When it comes down to this particular match, and I know you don't like shaking hands with people or just talking to people before a matchup, but let's just say if Calvin Tankman, the heavyweight hustle Calvin Tankman, were listening to this or watching this right now, what would you say to him, you know, as a way to... Basically, what would you say to him if y'all were face-to-face just staring at each other?
Nothing. There's too many people, man, that talk. You know what I'm saying? I don't talk a whole lot. I'm talking on this interview because you guys are asking the questions. Mm-hmm. You know? But I don't talk when I'm out there. I don't need to, honestly, you know, when it's, you know, when I don't see a whole lot. And when I do, I choose not to say a whole lot because I want there to be a weight behind the words that I choose to say.
Mm-hmm.
So if Calvin and I are eye to eye, I'm not there. I don't need to say anything because he's going to feel and see everything he needs to feel and see when we start going, you know? So there's not a whole lot to discuss. We both know what's coming. And he knows that I'm going to go. He's been on the same card as me. He knows my style. You know, I mean, I told you, man, like you can't stop me. Like I said, I got knocked out, man. And I got up. I don't remember the match. I had to go back and watch it. I didn't even know. I had no concept or clue of what happened out there, you know, but it didn't stop me from getting up, you know? So that's just the way it is, man. You look at Tito, he threw on numerous submission attempts on me and, you know, slammed me a few times and I got back up. There's no, bro, I can't describe to you, man. It's like if you've ever, I don't know, you probably have an experience in your life that I don't. And it'd be like you trying to explain it to me. I just won't get it. You know what I'm saying? You just won't.
Right.
I won't understand it. And I can't tell you enough, man. It's just like even now, like I'm starting to get fidgety because I'm thinking about, you know, next Thursday and I got to go run or do some push-ups or something because I got too much energy right now.
Well, I think it would probably lead me to this. I mean, when it comes down to your career, obviously you've only wrestled, I guess, for about 11 years, give or take a few years off.
Mm.
I mean, let's just say, considering the fact that, you know, this is Bloodsport, you could potentially say this is your last match at any time. But when it comes down to your career, what would you hope that people would remember your career by? If you were to just simply put the tape up.
I don't.
If it's a loaded question, I apologize, Eric.
No, it's not loaded. I'm just, you know, some of these are, I don't, this, my immediate response is I really don't care what people say. And so, but I'm trying for the sake of this interview to give you like a little deeper, maybe tap into something that other than I just don't give a fuck what anyone would say. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I really don't know. I've always competed for myself. You know, I'm under the impression that in order to be the best at anything, you have to be very, very selfish. You're selfish with your time. You're selfish, you know, with everything. Because if my goal is to be the best at chess, then I got no time for anything else. And during this lead up phase, that's another reason why, you know, I feel I don't do a lot of wrestling shows, is because I have a son, I have a 5-year-old, you know, and I want to be around him all the time, but I can't be when I'm doing this. You know, there's 2 hours of practice. You know, when I get home, he wants to go outside and run around, and I have to go out and do it because he's my son. But there's times where I'm like, bro, I'm hurting. But he doesn't care about that. All he sees is dad's home. Let's go out and wrestle. Let's go out and play baseball. You know, let's go do this and that. So, to do these things, man, and to be, you got to be selfish. And I don't know, bro. I don't know how to answer the question, honestly. I think I'm just rambling now because I'm trying to think of something for you, but I just don't give a fuck what anyone says because I don't do it for anyone else but myself.
Understood. I mean, you don't want to have your emotions reduced to tears when it comes down to answering that. I can totally understand that.
Well,
But,
yeah, I mean, emotion, yeah, you won't see that coming from me. You know what I'm saying?
of course. But come to
There's not a
think of
whole emotion.
it, understood,
behind this
understood.
one.
But come to think of it, I can ask you this. Obviously, is there any way you can plug your social media handles, your sponsors, all that good shit?
Nah, I don't. Nah, I'm I you know, me representing Bloodsport, that's it. You know, that's, yeah, I don't know, man. Like I talked about like North Korea and stuff and Inoki, and I don't share a lot of those stories. I know this is a public thing, but I don't talk about a lot of the cool stuff I've done with a lot of people, honestly. You know, I'm around some high-end athletes. Like I train a lot of high-end athletes at my gym. You know, I do a lot of their strength conditioning, and you wouldn't even know it. You know, like they're not on my social media a lot. I don't know, man. This whole world to me is now on. It's like everything you do is on display, and I don't know if I ever intended to just be private, but I don't like the limelight. And when I say that, you have to really grasp how much I love to compete. If I'm willing to walk out in front of the people, the crowd, and do that. So my willingness to fucking compete far surpasses the desire to stay like kind of nameless. 'Cause I love competing, man. I fucking love it.
Understood, understood. And one more thing, if there was one thing you would say to any aspiring wrestler that would want to take this seriously, or any non-wrestler that would basically see this as a way to, make money and get paid and, do all this other stupid shit, just lollygag, what would be the one thing you would say to them just to make them realize that this is for real?
Go learn how to wrestle. You know, I mean, even if you're an adult, go back. I got to spend a whole entire season training with a high school team out here, and it was the best. It was the best because these guys were awesome, man. And I got to get back into that high school grind again, and it was awesome. I loved it. But for all these, you know, younger guys coming up, younger women, go back and learn how to grind through a amateur wrestling practice, because it will teach you what you need and how you need to be through most scenarios in your life, whether it's business, personal. I mean, all the aspects of wrestling to me, a crossover to my life. And whether it's business, I can't be emotional. and carry my problems into my business, right? And my wife doesn't respect an emotional man. If I came home and cried every night, she wouldn't respect that. Like she wants a grinder. She wants a guy that's going to get up every day, go to fucking work. And that's what I do. You know, I don't care about being tired. And that's the same thing with wrestling. Wrestling practice doesn't care if you're tired. It doesn't care if you're hungover. You know, you got to get up, you got to go to work, because at the end of the day, it's you versus you. It's you versus someone else. And people miss that. That, man, this society today, bro, I go all day long about this shit. This society today is just going south for various reasons. But if more people had a grinding attitude about getting up, going to work, being committed to relationships and being, you know, just, I don't know, man, that wrestling life teaches you a ton.
I mean, I can basically put it in a way like this. I mean, I don't know if you watched any of the Creed movies, but, you know, basically the main quote you could probably say is, we don't break sweat, we break records.
Yeah. I don't get to too many movies, honestly, man. I physically have a TV in my room, but it's not on very much. You know, every waking second that I can, I'm with my wife or my, you know, my son. I spend a lot of time with my son, because as long as I'm alive, I'll do everything I can to make sure that he's a productive human to society, instead of deteriorating it like so many young men are out there now. And I think having a male figure in his life is extremely important. So, yeah, I don't get around TV a whole lot. I spend most of my time working with him and my athletes. So,
understood. And Andrew, you want to go ahead and wrap this up?
Yes. And you can see Eric Hammer take on Calvin Tankman at Bloodsport 9. Josh Barnett. I think the full title is GCW presents Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 9, if you must know. Next Thursday. What's the exact time, Chris? Because I know it's Pacific time. You have the exact time?
I think the exact time would probably be around 5 p.m. Pacific, so around 8 p.m. Eastern.
And so show is sold out. Only way you can watch is on Fight.tv, Fight TV Plus, which is their subscription service. Very easy to figure out. And Eric, once again, thank you again for talking to us. I know you said you are a private person. We talked many years ago. I didn't know if we were ever going to talk again, but listen, you know, it's always an honor to talk to somebody who's, you know, who's not out there in the public light and who's just, you know, will talk to us. We talk to a lot of the same people over and over again, and yeah, some are interesting, some are not, but listen, the first time we talked, you're interesting. Second time, even more interesting. So I appreciate that you also could have just said, no, not going to do it, but you gave us your time. We sincerely do appreciate it, both of us.
Awesome. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
And definitely looking forward to your match against Calvin at Bloodsport next week.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you. Talk to you later.